All right, Fuzz Club. We're talking about another kind of super group. Also another super group involving Bob Balch, which we just talked about two episodes ago about Flower. Today we're talking about Big Scenic Nowhere and their new album called The Way Down. What's up, everybody? We'll go around and introduce yourselves. Paul, it's been a little while. What's up?
It's been a while. It's the Cosmic Peddler. I'm back. I've been busy with my store, and hopefully I can start joining you guys more. I'm getting ready to hopefully I'm going to create a little podcast meet and greet area in my store, and I'm hoping to start live streaming from the store. And I'd like to try to figure something out where we can include like people to come in and like be a part of it somehow. It could be cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
Eddie?
Yeah, I'm Eddie. I'm from Low Talk, iOS, and The Endless.
Ben?
Ben Riz. I'm with Lost Dutchman.
Bucky. Doom Charts, Bandcamp, all over the place. So. Not in a band.
Welcome to the club. Big Scenic Nowhere. Bob Balch, Tony Reed. There's a couple other guys. There's kind of a rotating cast, it sounded like. Gary Archie of Yawning Man, I think is his name. I think that's how you say it anyway. They've had some guest appearances over the years from Mario Lali and Nick Oliveri and stuff like that. Kind of a, like I said, a super group of sorts. Kind of an offshoot of Yawning Man and a few other things, but I wasn't super familiar with these guys. I'm aware of them. I've seen their albums come out and recognize the artwork and stuff, but this was kind of a new one to me to dig into. So what about you guys? You guys know these guys pretty well?
I know Tony Reed. The other guys I'm not real too familiar with. Well, all the Yawning Man stuff, I know all that, but those guys personally, I haven't delved into them too much.
This one seems to be getting a lot of attention already. I see, you know, I wasn't surprised. It's one of those albums that you hear it, and whether you like it or not, you kind of know that people are going to feel strongly about it one way or another. And seen a lot of people saying already, you know, it's going to be on their end of the year list and whatnot. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Even, you know, in our chat, the Fuzz Club chat and stuff, it's a little divided, which is just interesting. It's kind of like you love it or hate it kind of a thing. So this will be a fun one to talk about, I think.
It's different. It's different. I think it's a little bit different than the other ones. And listening to it, it might be one of those albums. You know, for me, sometimes you listen to something one time and you're like, okay, it's all right. And you listen to it some more and then you're like, oh shit, now you kind of get it type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is it was kind of surprising for me. Like, I wasn't expecting to like it so much. I heard like the previous stuff, like a couple tracks here and there, but this stuff really got my attention. There's a lot of cool stuff going on. The guitar work and everything is amazing.
I was kind of the same. I've known about them, and I mean, they've been around a few years.
Yeah.
Last year they put out one on the Blues Funeral post-Wax series, Dying on the Mountain. It was good. I was never like a massive fan of them. So like Eddie, I heard some buzz about this one from a few folks, and I pushed play, and I was kind of blown away, like pleasantly surprised at how much I liked it compared to what I liked previously. Maybe it's the opposite for some folks. Like, they liked the earlier stuff, and this one wasn't different enough to where they're like, I don't know about this one. But man, yeah, it was really cool. And
it sounds like they kind of switch it up each time from what I was reading a little bit. There's kind of like a punk influence on some of the earlier stuff, and then it got a little heavier or something. And then this one, I mean, I don't really even know what you call this exactly. So I don't know what you guys think.
This is very progressive rock.
I was curious, man. I was going to see what you guys called it. Cause I'll tell you, I think it's kind of it's weird. It's like a melodic, a little bit, melodic, hard, psychedelic rock. I don't know.
It's kind of like the real, like the true definition of like stoner rock, like desert rock, because like being stoned for this album, I think would help. And I was listening to Connor's review on Banger TV today, just a little bit about this album. He reviewed it And I think he mentioned peyote a couple times in describing this one. So maybe it's one of those things that it's definitely like a stoner desert rock, not like stoner, like heavy stoner driving through the desert, but like wandering the desert kind of.
Yeah, it was more like melodic, like, you know, it wasn't so much like stoner for me. It was more like a melodic kind of stoner. It was different. Yeah.
Being a stoner in the desert, I can vouch. This is good music.
I have a distinct, like, this definitely verges into, like, I put on my Bandcamp review, the progressive song structures, Sublime giving me all sorts of Mastodon meets Baroness vibes. Like, if you, like, every song, every time I listen to it, it's just more and more yellow and green era Baroness. Mm-hmm. And like the guitar breaks and guitar solos sound like something off Crack the Sky, Mastodon. Yeah. It's got that doomy, like sludgy tone, but very accessible and very like to me, that's what it is. But then it's got almost a kraut rock kind of song writing to it. Like it's got that hippiness.
Yeah. It's like desert. Like the vocals, like it reminds me of like something you can like sing along to. Every time I put it on, I just like catch myself singing along to all the vocals all the time. And like the guitar work in like surf western, reminds me of something like Baroness or something like that.
Yeah, that one in particular, like the last 2 minutes of surf western are like you could mistaken that from a Mastodon record without the vocals, like. At least to me, like
I thought Brent Hinds was singing, to be honest. For the first two songs, I thought it was him because that's what he sounds like when they let him open his mouth.
Yeah. It's almost like, and that was always my beef with Mastodon. Like early stuff was I didn't like the vocals, and then their latter era, the vocals got better and it kind of got more poppy.
Yeah.
But yeah. The bass work. The bass, Tony's on bass. The bass work is very progressive, like very kind of psychedelic and it, like garagey almost, like that tone. It's just like kind of like a lot of albums we talked about. Like the Slift record had a lot of that bass kind of.
Yeah, you can tell you can tell they kind of let the bass player just, okay, you do your own thing over here. And like he's putting everything into it, like all this technical stuff and still being groovy at the same time.
Mm-hmm. For being so like progressive, stonery, kind of wandering the desert thing, they're surprisingly like accessible songs and short songs too. I mean, there's two over 7 minutes, but a lot of them around like 4 minutes and stuff, which I thought was surprising. I mean, in a genre that's you know, loves the long songs and the long trips, these are like short little trips. Mm-hmm. You just take short little trips on these things. Just thought that was interesting. I mean, you know, especially coming from the guys that make like Yawning Man and stuff, these were just like very like digestible little bits, you know.
They felt like little music paintings, like an entire album worth of musical paintings, because like there was so much texture and layering, and it easy to get lost in it. And I mean, you could put a million things on the television as like a visual and it would just pair with it so well, but yeah, it just completely getting lost in every single song on that album was just a real treat.
Yeah, for sure.
We talked a little bit about their older stuff and how this was a little different, how they've kind of switched it up on each album. I'm looking through kind of their discography here. They have a couple full lengths, a couple like EPs. But, you know, how did this compare for people that know their older stuff? Way different style, too hard to compare, or like better or worse? How'd you guys feel about it?
I thought each album was different, especially the very first one, and it kind of, they all have their own uniqueness, to include this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some similarities because, you know, it's Tony Reed, but you can see a difference in all of them. And like Bucky said, you know, definitely I think this one was more progressive than all the other ones.
I don't know. I didn't spend enough time with the older ones to really get a good sense. And I haven't, I should have done my homework and went back and listened to them recently, but I don't remember getting as into it as this new one. I've like replayed it more than I do most albums. It's that enjoyable.
Why do you think that that is? What's so enjoyable to you about it?
I think Tony Reed had his hands really into this one. It reminds me more of like the classic rock, I even see other people like reviews on Bandcamp mentioning AOR. Like, yeah, it's got that very, like, this could have been played on the radio in the 70s.
Right.
And you would have not known. And if you know Tony Reed or follow him at all, he's a music encyclopedia. Like, he's dug deep into like the classic rock and I don't know, I'm trying to think of some of the guys he always talks about, like Steely Dan and like some of those, like very progressive kind of dividing type of musicians, but he's all about that stuff. And this album sounds kind of that way.
Why do you think that it's so like heavily marketed to like the stoner scene then, if it's got kind of this classic thing? There's nothing classic about like the album artwork. I mean, a lot of these guys are in like the stoner rock, desert rock scene themselves. And it seems like this album and the others definitely are like destined for like the desert rock scene and stuff. But I feel like if they could like change up the album cover or the look or something, it could be easily like thrown out to a different scene altogether. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I wonder what made them like lean into this instead of like leaning into like a different crowd. And because the music is definitely accessible, just depends on how you tell people about it, I guess. And being on Blues Funeral and then Heavy Psych, Heavy Psych Sounds put this one out. I mean, they're definitely like, they know their audience is like stoners and desert rock folk. But like you said, I mean, it could be easily like on the radio and stuff. So, you know, I'm just curious why they lean into that or not, I guess.
I think it's familiarity more than anything, really. You know, I mean, if you've got a built-in audience, sell to that built-in audience. Mm-hmm. Why try to break into a different market if you don't have to?
Yeah, I think Tony Reed's just so well known in the stoner psychedelic rock scene. He's just so well known, man. His hands are in so much stuff. This is his home. I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that man can pretty much put out anything. I always tell people this, dude, if you want to sell a record, also have it mastered by Tony Reed, dude. That by itself is a huge selling point.
Yeah. Well, and Bob Balch is such a you know, unique, talented individual. We just talked about him on the Slower episode, you know, playing like doomed, slowed down Slayer songs, and then here we're talking about like very radio friendly desert like stoner progressive rock too. I mean, to me they couldn't be more different from each other. And you know, he's got his fingers all over both of them, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guys are just they are the scene, so why they have nowhere else to go. They're just making music they like to hear, like what they like, and it's the heavy underground, like this, as we'll find out tomorrow on the Doom charts. I suspect this is going to be in the top two of the month.
Yeah,
I mean, I can almost guarantee it's probably not going to beat the Obsessed, just based on what I feel, but it'll be in the top three or four. I bet. Which means they kind of hit their mark as far as marketing. Tony Reed's last project last year, Hot Springs Water, is borderline country music. Like, it's classic rock, and
it was one
of my favorite albums of the year. But I mean, yeah. I listened to a lot of that stuff too, so
yeah, that's another one that's like it was marketed to like this group of people, but like it's very different sounding, and it's got like its kind of own like tone to it. And to think that this album, which doesn't have much doom in it, you know, is gonna hit like top three on the doom charts, is like, it just speaks to like the audience that follows these guys and are like loyal to them. I think
another thing is like this scene is full of like open-minded people who are, they're into all kinds of different genres usually, because stoner rock is a mix of everything, like blues, rock, metal, and doom, and all kinds of stuff. And so if they keep their fan base, they're going to access everybody like that, right?
Yeah. So speaking of open-mindedness, the song Sarah Smile. It's a Hall & Oates cover, which I thought was just super, super strange for this album. It felt, to me, it felt super out of place the first time I heard it. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? It was like, you know, this like old, like soul R&B, like real easy listening type of jam. And it's on this album. I just thought it was really strange. And then I heard a lot of you saying in the group chat how much you guys loved it. And I was like, I don't know. And I'm not a Hall & Oates fan or anything like that, but I just thought it was really strange. They did a great job with it. I think they did a great cover of it. But I was like, what is this doing here? And then I was reading about it today, and Elliot Lewis from Hall & Oates played keyboards on it, which I thought was cool. So
probably lent itself, to a little more authenticity, a little more punch that way. But yeah, when that came on, I thought that the Spotify DJ had been selected or something, you know, because like that clearly was not me making that selection. Sure. Nothing against Hall & Oates. I mean, great band. But yeah, that was weird.
It was weird. Yeah.
I think it's fits perfectly, because just the conversations we've had already, like we're like, where does this fit? Like, why, like Hall & Oates, like that pretty much shows you that this is what they're all about. And I know I can say it again, Tony Reed, I guarantee you it was his idea. He's probably a huge Hall & Oates fan. Like, the guys are gods in the music world. And I don't know. I think there's a good amount of like doomy textures in it. Like, for the doom charts side of things, or the doom scene, if you listen to some of those guitar riffs, it's like, it's pretty fucking doomy. It's like,
there's definitely some riffs in there. I mean, there's definitely some riffs here and there. There's some moments of like some heavier nods. But overall, I think they keep it pretty chill. And that Sarah Smile is a good example. I mean, they didn't even like doomify that song. They didn't even stonerize that song. They kept that thing like real, real chill. So
in the past, we kind of talked about, when we were talking about albums, how like most albums have like one song that's like just out there. And I think, you know, this different from all the rest. And this is that one. And I think, like Bucky, you know, saying, Tony Reed is such a master at this. He just looks for stuff to challenge himself with, and this is just something that's kind of off on the album. It's a little bit different, that he can just show that, you know, how good he is, man. He's a phenomenal artist.
Yeah,
and that leads right into the next song off right after Sarah Smiles, the song BTOH. It's probably their heaviest song on the album. Like, as far as like riffy and like tone, it leads right into like more of a heavy rock, heavy doom song. So the two most Sarah Smile, Hall & Oates leads into their heaviest song, like back to back. They gotta quench the everybody, like, hey, don't leave, come back. Like, we got some heaviness for you.
Yeah, they pulled a nice little switcheroo right there. I mean, that if I had to arrange an album, you know, like I probably would have done something similar too. Maybe it's like you said, you're saying, but paraphrase, like an I'm sorry here, have some heavy.
Yeah, I think so.
I like that they switch it up and have like different mood of a song on there like that, because it's totally caught me off guard too. Like, they did a really good job of it, and it's good. I like when bands do that. Strange.
It does feel very like organic, and what I mean is, they just feel like they got together and just started making music, like without kind of like an agenda of, you know, here's what we need to make, here's what it needs to sound like. They just kind of go like, here's what I'm feeling at the moment, and it's going on the album. And reading some of like the write-ups on it and stuff, even on their Bandcamp, they put most of these recordings go back to 2021. So they're not all like, you know, just on the spot, new songs. Two tracks are from late 2020 even, and one track is from 2018. So it was just kind of stuff they've been like jamming on, I guess, for a while. It sounds like, says usually the way they record is they get together and jam, then edit the jams down songs afterwards. All the songs in the album were constructed that way, except for 100, Bleed On, Summer Teeth, and Sarah Smile. And then they go into to kind of talk about who came up with different riffs and stuff like that. And, I think it's, Tony Reed that is speaking here, but he said the one that I structured at home and had musicians play on after the fact, we're beyond stoked to have Hall & Oates keyboard player guest on it. And, you know, it like, it just sounds like they were just kind of having fun, which is cool. And I don't always get that vibe just from like I said earlier, like the artwork and it just seems like a very serious, like desert record or something. And it just sounds like it was kind of like this fun project, which I think you can kind of feel as you listen to it. It's kind of cool. Those musicians doing what they do.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Like I'm not always like a big fan of supergroup albums like this. I would say this is somewhat of a supergroup. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys from other bands getting together, and you wouldn't even know it listening to this. You can't really hear any of the other band's influence. Right. It sounds like just a cohesive album from some new band.
Yeah,
or some old band.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're their own thing. It's not like you hear like Fu Manchu riffs or something over, you know, Tony Reed's vocals. It's like it's really its own thing. They do a good job of kind of making it its own group.
It was no Seagull Men, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what y'all think about that, but like when it, I'm not even like even dabbled a toe in the big Scenic Nowhere pool before this selection. So when I went and put on, I was like, are you shitting me? This is Flight of the Seagull Men all over again. And then I kind of let it sink in and I'm like, okay, all right. I'm going to reserve judgment until it's over. That first listen, I'm like, holy shit. I'm going to keep listening to this. And I ended up listening to that album pretty much all day long after that. Me and Eddie were talking and I had it going on in the background.
Yeah, I ordered the Heavy Psych, one of the vinyl from Heavy Psych, and it would be in the background here, but it hasn't showed up yet because it come from Europe, so they take a while.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes, so.
Anything that they could improve upon or that you didn't quite like or didn't quite tickle your fancy?
I don't know, man. I've made comments that from what I've heard this year so far, might be my favorite album of the year, like close to it. I mean, this February was a big month of a lot of pretty good albums came out in February.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this was my top album on my votes for the Doom charts this month.
Yeah, I wouldn't change anything about this. It's really original ones. Compared to a lot of stuff that comes out, it definitely sticks out. And it's a lot of unique parts to the songs there. And it's like sing-along music, so it's enjoyable to listen to, right?
Yeah, I agree, man. I think Eddie hit it on the head. It's unique. It's off from what most other people are doing, and it's great. So, yeah, good album.
What would you like to see them do in the future? Like, not to, you know, keep bringing up the same points, but it sounds like they kind of switch it up each album. But in your own personal views, you know, anything you'd like to see them do or do better or do more of?
Not Metallica songs.
Not Metallica songs?
Yeah, not Metallica songs. No, okay. That's one thing I don't want them to do.
I think they could probably handle that.
They probably do a really good job at it. I mean, Balch is no slouch on guitar. Oh, speaking of that, like, anybody else like pleasantly surprised with that man's guitar work, like in this group? I mean, normally he's just like a real riff machine, and like here, geez, he shreds.
He's one of my favorite guitar players for sure.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, I wouldn't change a whole lot, man. I love the uniqueness about it, and I think that's what makes it different and will make it stand out.
I'd say bring us some black metal influence for the next album.
I feel like I knew you were going to say that.
I don't think Tony likes black metal. I don't know. He seems to be a real classic rock kind of guy.
Yeah.
He loves the classic rock influences for sure.
How active and how big Bob actually really is. I was just watching that that Foo Fighters like horror movie that they made, Studio 666. It's a great fucking movie if you've never seen it. It's like funny but like gory and it's cool. Mm. But Bob Balch even makes an appearance in that movie. They like have like his, you know, YouTube videos up, like the play this riff thing, and I'm like, dude, he made it into like this fucking big studio like mainstream movie and shit, and I kind of forget like how much he rules sometimes.
That's funny. Yeah, the art, I mean, also, the artwork, you mentioned the artwork, it's I dig the artwork too. It's super cool. I mean, it doesn't fit the music as much as you would expect, but
it's killer. Just by the artwork and their past artwork too. I mean, I think they have really consistent like look and feel, which is cool. But just by like how elaborate and just like almost psychedelic their artwork is, I always expect it to be almost more, I guess, like longer, like more trippy, or just, I don't know.
Something. Right.
So it always throws me off a little bit, and it sure did this time, especially just going like hearing Sarah Smile and stuff on this album, fucking like eye over the desert or some fucking planet or something. And I wasn't expecting like a Sarah Smile type of song with this type of artwork. But with that said, the artwork is great. I tried to find out like, you know, who has created a lot of their artwork, and I didn't find a whole lot, but I don't know who did this one, but it's great. It's awesome. I just it throws me off when I hear the music a little bit.
It definitely looks like it's the same person that's done a lot of their stuff.
It could be. They are, like I said, they are very consistent. But I don't know who did the artwork on any of them, so it's hard for me to say. Although the one that they did, like you were talking about, Bucky, the Post-Wax.
Yeah.
I mean, that one looks like a lot of Post-Wax stuff. So I'm guessing like Peter had a hand in it or something like that.
Well, but yeah. I think the Post-Wax might almost be commissioned by a single artist to do them all.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't remember if Peter was like actually creating some of that art or if he was like the one kind of like coordinating it or handpicking. I don't remember exactly what the story was, but they all have a really consistent look. But
The Way Down album cover looks like it could be, so it's very similar to the Post-Wax art.
Yeah.
Like got that same vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But I don't remember their last album, the Post-Wax, the Dying on the Mountain, it was called, 2021. I don't remember liking it as much as I like this one. I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't like wowed by it. Mm. So
are you guys fans of Yawning Man or Yawning Bulge? Either one. That's just one of those things that I could never really get into. I only checked out a few things here and there, but it was not my not my style.
It's not totally my thing either. I could listen to it, but I'm not seeking it out actively.
Mm-hmm. I don't hate it.
Yeah, me too, man. Not necessarily my thing, dude. I sold a shit ton of a Yawning Man stuff. Not totally my thing. I prefer heavier stuff. I like a little bit heavy. Yeah. So
yeah, Yawning
Man's definitely not heavy.
They're another one of those bands that, like, man, the people that love them are like diehards.
Love them.
I always hear them talked about and getting brought up and stuff. And then to see kind of like this band, you know, being associated with them a little bit and stuff. But
they're more in that. They're more in the category of like the Grateful Dead, but stoner version, like the desert rock version. They're very kind of jammy and just real trippy and just kind of go on and on with the jams and that fits the desert, like it fits where they're from.
I guess that's kind of why I was maybe expecting more of that here, and maybe that's just my fault, I guess, but that's kind of what I was expecting here.
Yeah, It's the Tony Reed, man. Tony Reed Tony's not a Yawning Man, right? I mean, he came on. I mean, it's like you took Yawning Man, added Tony Reed from the Pacific Northwest, and you get a lot more rock and roll, not so much psychedelic stoner, like desert rock.
Yeah, Yawning Man was formed by Gary Archie, who's, I guess, connecting point to Big Scenic Nowhere, and then Alfredo Hernandez, Mario, right? And then Mario, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Which they've been, I mean, Mario and all those guys have been very active as of late in the scene. Like, they were at Ripple Fest. Mario's, I mean, all over and all the different, lots of projects.
Yeah.
Didn't they just put one out? The Snake Charmers, didn't that just come out, or it's coming out, or something like that? I think
there was a Rubber Snake Charmers album, I think, that Heavysight put out not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to meet Mario at a concert one night. That's pretty awesome. That was when Storm played, and they signed that poster there behind me.
Wait, who are you seeing?
This Stoner and Fetzel Jetson, Big Scenic Nowhere.
Nice. Oh, sweet. Oh, so you've seen Big Scenic Nowhere?
Yeah.
Oh, how was it?
It was awesome, man.
Sweet.
Yeah, first time I saw Tony Reed was at Ripple Fest 1, the very first Ripple in Oakland, California, at this bar called the Golden Bowl. And this was like in 2015, 2014. It was, and he's playing with Moss Generator. It was, and I never knew much about him. I remember hearing Moss Generator. I knew Stone Axe, but I was with Todd at the time, and like he was like, dude, watch Tony. He's like a rock legend. And sure enough, dude, he gets up there with this, like, holes in his Levi's and his flannel shirt. Like, he looked like straight out of the 90s.
Yeah.
And just, it was like a wild man. And it was cool because I was staying with Todd from Ripple, and Tony crashed. Like, Tony came over after the show. Like, we stayed at Todd's house all together.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I think that's the last time I really hung out or talked to him. Like 10 years ago.
Last year at Ripple Fest was, like, the Rubber Snake Charmers and stuff. That was cool to see all them, like, just kind of up there jamming, like, all these, like, just legends, you know? And Brant Bjork was there, and he, I think he went on stage, like, three different times with, like, three different bands, and Nick Oliveri was there and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool to see, like, all those guys, like, I don't know, kind of having, like, I think I've said this before, but, like, kind of having, like, a resurgence now, like, recently, just getting in, like, different bands, putting out new music with old bands, playing different shows, doing different festivals and stuff. Like, there's, like, this kind of new appreciation for a lot of this stonery stuff, whether it's new or old, I guess.
Yeah, and it looks like a lot of announcements with next year's Ripple Fest have been released, and a lot of these guys are coming back, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all going this year?
It's a long way out, man. I can't make plans that far in advance, but probably.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to make it this year, but I'd like to. If I could figure it out, I'd love to. It was a blast.
Last year was killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm planning on trying to make it myself. But I mean, you know, like Bucky just said, I mean, like, it's kind of hard to plot all that out. But I owe somebody a visit in the area. And I kind of promised, and I try to be the guy who lives up to his promises. So if nothing else, I'm going to have a good visit out of it too.
Yeah. I don't know if it was the Rubber Snake Charmers, but isn't there one that's kind of similar? It's called, like, the Legends of the Desert, something or other. Isn't there?
That's a kind of a series on Desert Records. Legends of the Desert. Like, I think there's like a 3-part series of different folks.
I thought something like that was going to Ripple Fest this year. I thought
it
Ryan
might be. I know Brad with Desert Records is buddies with all those guys. I know he's buddies with Jad. And Jad looks like, Legends of the Desert Volume 1, 2, 3, Pale Horse, Pale Rider, Fatso Jetson, Dalai Lama was third volume. The Penitent Man and Cortege was the second volume. So
Legion of Doom. What's that? Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Oh, Legion. Yeah. You might have been thinking of that. Legions of Doom. That's another one.
Yeah. What is that? Fatso Justin will be there too. So
I'm just thinking two wrestlers, big shoulder pads, and lots of body slams. Yeah. Legion of Doom, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't fuck with Legions of Doom.
Yeah. And then they'll just put a foot on your chest after they knock you down. Go, what a rush.
Right. It looks like some sort of comic book is what I'm it's a group of supervillains in the DC universe.
Yeah.
Top Google search. So
oh, they're from Chicago. I feel like maybe I should know who they are. I don't know.
Come on. You should know.
The Legion of Doom?
Legion of Doom, yeah.
Legion of Doom was a cartoon. I used to watch it when I was a kid. It was a Super Friends and the Legion of Doom back in the 80s. You can look it up, man. It had like all the Super Friends and then all the Doom characters, man.
Wonder Twin Powers, activate.
Yeah, yeah. Foremouth Weed.
This says Foremouth
Bong.
Lothar, is that his name?
Lothar, yeah.
Yeah, Henry Vasquez from the Skull, St.
Vitus. Hawkman, Wonder Twins, Wonder Woman, Batman.
Agel from Corrosion Conformity.
Oh, what was that?
Okay. And Scott Regers from St. Vitus, also. Legions of Doom.
And it's a band? They formed a band called that? Like a super group.
Legions of Doom, hell yeah. Legions of Doom.
It sounds like after Eric Wagner passed away, maybe they kind of like formed this thing up to keep something going. But nice. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else about Big Scenic Nowhere?
It's a killer album, man.
I'm going to have to listen to it some more. I said it didn't grab me. And after hearing you guys, it's like, you know, it just may have been I was just distracted because I listened to it at the store quite a bit. I probably just need to sit down at night and like listen to it when I'm half baked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, one for sure. I mean, you know, it's different. It's different than a lot of the stuff we've talked about. It's a cool little thing.
Hell yeah.
I'm cheating right now. I'm going in to see you. See who won the Doom charts. I'm not going to tell you, but
I mean, technically, this will come out after the Doom charts.
Yeah, you can spoil it, Bucky.
It'll come out at like midnight tonight. So let me see. Yeah, because no one's going to hear this till it's already out.
Yeah, it's going
to be next week, dude.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit, dude. I'm kind of surprised. It's number three.
All right.
So, okay.
But I thought that The Obsessed was going to be number one, and it's not. Spoiler alert, it's not.
Whew.
Which is kind of, it wasn't number one on my list, but number one actually doesn't surprise me either, just from what I've seen hype about this last couple weeks. So, you guys want to know?
Sun Drifter was up there for me. Enjoyed that one a lot.
That's number one.
Oh, yeah?
Get out of here. Wow.
Yep.
It's a great album. It's cool.
Yeah. So that'll be out like midnight tonight. Like it comes out. I think he has an auto set to publish.
Oh.
Like early in the morning.
Cool. You want to do Sun Drifter next week?
Yeah.
That one's got a lot of hype, man.
Yeah. I've always been a huge fan of Sun Drifter, and their album Visitations was on repeat for me for a long time. And this one's cool. They you know, they tried some new stuff on it and expanded on their sound a little bit. I thought that was awesome.
And is it still Small Stone? Is that who put this out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up and we can chat about all the other stuff offline, I guess. Paul, tell everybody what you're up to.
Well, I was telling you guys earlier, man, I just physically got caught up from back in Ripple Fest, and all those shows that I did really set me back because I got this store and I didn't realize I was taking on, you know, too much. but I finally got caught up. I just expanded my store, and I'm hoping to create a place in the back of my store to start streaming, become more part of these podcasts. I want to stream live from the store, maybe incorporate even, you know, bring some bands in for, you know whatever, bring some customers in, make them listen to the record and give us another perspective or something cool. We could talk about that. But I'm working on that. There's a record release that I'm probably going to have later this year. I'll have a cool record, and it should be a whole slew of records from this band. They're badass. They have a lot of records, and I think I want to work with them to put out some of their stuff. I'm hoping to do that, and then just thinking about Ripple Fest and stuff. You know, later I hope to be involved in that. So that's about it.
Very cool, Eddie.
The analyst is setting up some shows for the summer to do some promo for the album that I just released, and we just got all our merch online for online orders right now. You can get the vinyl in the U.S. through Paul at the Cosmic Peddler. Writing and recording with iOS right now. We got some news coming out really soon, and I'm pretty excited to share that. And Low Talk is still working on the next album.
Right on. Bucky, anything?
No, I gave kind of some previews of what's coming up the Doom charts, and
yeah,
I just got kids' sports games to go to tonight, and
yeah,
got a lot of shows coming through town. I got to pick which ones I'm gonna go to. So
nice,
always something coming through Denver. So
yeah, Ben.
Well, Lost Dutchman, we are working on a live album. We kind of sort of half scrapped a studio idea in favor of more of a live sound. So we made acquaintance of a really great engineer with a good live rig that we're going to be utilizing, and hopefully have that out to y'all soon. And I hate to do the local band thing, but big news ahead that I can't really talk about, sort of, kind of. But it'll blow y'all's haystacks when it pans out. Trust me.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Awesome.
Yes.
All right. Everybody go check out Big Scenic Nowhere and go check out some Fuzz Club episodes, and we'll see you on the next one.
See you guys.
Later.